No, I'm gonna retell you. We're here at the May meeting, Saturday night, East Coast Convention 24, and our speakers asked for Joni H. to come up and introduce him. Turn the meeting over to Joni.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Joan Nominatic, and I'll stand on my tippy toes. I'd like to say that the East Coast Convention had a very special place in my husband's heart, so it's heartwarming for me to be here, and it's a privilege. Barry is our Saturday night speaker, and to just sum it up, he's not a friend. He's not someone my husband sponsored. He's family to me. And we know each other over 30 years, Barry, at least. Our kids were born. We raised our families together. We've gone through ups and downs. But the one little story I'm going to share before I introduce him is this. You know that person in your life you can count on no matter what? Well, Barry's that guy. I was in my house, and my husband was failing. And I heard my doorbell ring. And I live in New Jersey, and Barry lives in Florida. And I opened the door, and I said, "Barry, what are you doing here?" He said, "When I asked you if you were okay, you paused." That's the person who's getting up to share with us tonight. "When I asked you if you were okay, you paused." And he got on a plane and he bought a one-way ticket. And he wasn't leaving until I was okay. And he stayed for weeks and helped me do some of the most unthinkable caregiving. And, with that, all I can say is he is on my all-star team. You know, I love him. I love him madly, and he is one of the dearest people in my life. So with that, I will give you the pleasure of having a piece of him in your life tonight. Barry.
Hey everybody, I'm an addict. My name is Barry. I don't want to fall off the chair. My balance isn't so good. My coordination isn't so good. A lot of things aren't so good, but my spirit's filled to the max. Good? I hate phallic symbols. But I'm here because Dutch would have wanted it that way. And if I could, I would like to dedicate this meeting to Dutch. This was his favorite. He was a criminal. He was a convict. And he loved Narcotics Anonymous, and he loved Narcotics Anonymous hospitals and institutions. And he loved anything at all that had to do with helping an inmate find a better way to live. And the first thing I would like to do is, we got Joey the Kid. Stand up, Joey. We're introducing him to our way of life. And the most important thing we could tell you is you never ever have to use again. And as long as you have us, you'll never want for anything. You're welcome, man. We love you, and we challenge you to accept our invitation to this way of life, because why else would we be here if it didn't work or if it was half-assed? This is the real deal, man. I tell people, I have a detox commitment in Fort Myers, Florida, Gulf Coast, NA, best area in the whole country. I have the detox commitment, and people say, why do you want the detox commitment? And I simply say, because I want them first. I want them first, because I want them before they get spoiled by treatment or language. I want them before they get talked to by another fellowship. I want them to know the real deal. And the real deal is Narcotics Anonymous. Yeah.
Do you mind if I take this?
No, not yourself. We're actually a town name. My life sucked. If you notice my hands are shaking, it's not an illusion. I have Parkinson's disease. And, you know, it's a funny thing. I've never been scared to die, but now at times I'm scared to live. This disease won't kill you, but it is progressive. And it just gets worse and worse and worse. And I think to myself, like, I was at the heart doctor, and he gave me like a great report. He said, oh, with your heart, you'll live till you're 85. And I thought to myself, do I really want to live to be 85? If this disease is going to progress? Because I can't, you know, when I first got diagnosed, I went on YouTube and saw videos of people with end-stage Parkinson's, or, you know, and like I watched my grandfather with it, and my grandfather couldn't get a piece of meat onto a fork it into his mouth. And I think, do I really want to live like that? But the thing is, this loving God, the God of Narcotics Anonymous, the God of my understanding, has things in store for me that I have no clue what they're about. I have no clue how good or wonderful they could be. All I know is, I read in the Living Clean book, I think it's on page 5 or 6, it says, oftentimes we receive gifts, but we don't receive them to be gifts by the way that they're wrapped. So I don't know what's good and what's bad. All I know is I have faith in a God that has rescued me from depravity, from a life that sucked, from a life that I would probably at some point be back in jail with Wayne. That's where we met 50 years ago. 12-24-66.
12-21-91.
Maryland Department of Correction. If I have to go through that to get to this, it was a score. A score. Narcotics Anonymous has changed my life. It has given me a purpose, a reason to live. I moved down to Florida like 7 years ago. 7.5 years ago, I retired. I had a second neck surgery, and the doctor wouldn't pass me, and I was ineligible for a DOT physical, which I was a driver all my life. And so they retired me, and I moved down to Florida. I had two beautiful Harley Davidsons, and I thought to myself, I'm going to go down there, and my job is going to be what motorcycle am I going to ride, and what meter today, and what newcomer am I going to help? And I was there a short period of time, and I got diagnosed with the Parkinson's. And I had a 66 shovel head that was beautiful. First year shovel. And I just got rid of a 65 pan. last year pain, and I got rid of a street glide and I bought a truck. So thank God I'm still in the wind. And I might not be on two wheels, but I'm on three. I already got the word from Miss Joni that she's got eyes only. With all the guys down in our area who ride, and there may come a time when she's going to want me to surrender it. And because she's family, because I respect everything that she says and does, I'll do what she says because I know she has my heart and my will and my life in her care. You know, when I asked us to be my sponsor, I had no clue I was getting a friend. I had no idea I was getting his wife is a co-sponsor. I've known them for 35 years, and they've never let me down. They've never lied to me. They've never gone and done anything behind my back. They've never excluded me from anything. Jordy got baptized in my backyard, and I was at his college graduation. They're great parents. They're great people. And, you know, in Dutch, some of you may not know Dutch or have Dutch. Dutch was the first Board of Trustees member of our World Service from the East Coast. And he helped basically build and grow East Coast Narcotics Anonymous. And during his early days, he used to tell us that he used to travel from the Jersey Shore up to Newark, Princeton, White Deer Run, Pennsylvania, 185 miles each way to help start and build Narcotics Anonymous. That's dedication, that's gratitude. This meeting is about gratitude. And to me, you know, I'm not putting anybody down or I'm not trying to be controversial, but when people say, when they identify as a grateful recovering addict, the first thing that goes through my head is, show me. Come tell me. Let me see it. Let me see what you're about. And I mean, some people really are about it. You know, I'm about, like, I really believe that, like, if you say you're about it, fuck, you better be about it. Yeah, you better be about it. You know, like, I'm not loud, I'm not controversial, I'm not political, but I'm committed to this program, and I'm committed to the growth and the development of this program, because the better our program does, and the better our fellowship does, the more of us that are going to be saved, and the more these seats are going to be filled.
Yeah.
And that's why I have a commitment. And I'm committed to my home group. I have a key, I open the door. I get there an hour early. And my home group is the Clean and Serene group in Cape Coral, Florida. Monday night at 7 o'clock, I'm there at 6 every Monday night to open the door. And we're fortunate, we have an abundance of clean time and recovery in our home group. We have 6 members with 30 plus years. Which is a statement, but you have to remember too, we're in Florida. So we get a lot of retirees. But it's a beautiful thing to have that kind of recovery to walk into. And we change lives. So I'll tell you a little bit about me. I was a kid that was just a mess. Always a mess. I grew up behind a brother who was 13 months older than me, who turned out to be a physician. And he knew he wanted to be a doctor when he was 10 years old. And when I would read comic books and he would read encyclopedias, and he would watch documentaries and I would watch cartoons. And I could tell you how to end a war in Vietnam but couldn't make a sandwich. You know, I would walk by a window. And you know, and how you're looking for your shadow, and I would see no shadow. I consider myself to be empty on the inside, just a shell of a human being. And my brother would bring home straight A's. He skipped a year of medical school. He was president of the National Honor Society, and I would get to, he was 13 months older than me, and he would get the same teachers as me. And he would have them the year before me, and at the beginning of the year, the teacher would go, "Oh, I'm so proud of your brother. I'm so pleased to have you. I'm sure you'll be just like him." And I rolled my eyes. And by 2 weeks, they had me at the principal's office, and famous words came out, "What's wrong with you?" And I grew up with those words, "What's wrong with you?" I had my first encounter with the police in the second grade. I got caught stealing baseball cards at the drugstore. When I was 14, we got caught robbing an ice cream truck on the way home from summer school. And it just progressed, and the more I added the drugs, the more the progression of the disease set in. And by the time I was 20 years old, in 1969, I went for my physical for Vietnam, and I was found to be 4F, which is undesirable for selective service, because I was already on methadone maintenance and had already been arrested for possession of heroin. And that's when I went to prison and met Wayne. He was already there keeping the floors clean. And then it's a funny thing, I didn't see Wayne for years. And while I did see him right out of jail, he ripped us off. And then I didn't see him for years, and I went to a H&I learning day in Annapolis, Maryland, and there was Wayne. And he was clean a bunch of years, and I was pretty new. And I didn't know whether to hug him or hit him. But I hugged him. And it was the best move I made, because it helped keep me a member in good standing of this wonderful program. So that's the way my life continued until I found Narcotics Anonymous. And I found Narcotics Anonymous in 1983. Well, in the year, well, before that, my first attempt at treatment, I was in a state mental hospital, Spring Grove State Hospital. A judge put me in there, and I got caught doing a burglary. And I was there the year that the Colts lost to Joe Namath. And that was a long time ago. And I escaped and never went back. And my life just got worse after that. I kept getting arrested. And in 1983, I went to treatment for the first time, and I was there for 60-some days. And I left with an incomplete treatment because they said I didn't cry. So if you see me, I cry a lot now. I left with a completed treatment, and I stayed clean 2 days. When I left, I was told that I was what they consider to be chronic and habitual, and my chances of recovery are slim and none. And I'm like, man, thanks. You know, and all I knew was somebody had spent a lot of money to send me there, my union. And that they knew more than me, so maybe I should listen. And my aftercare counselor, her name was Mary, and she said, "I want you to go to 5 AA meetings a week because that's where all the recovery is. And I want you to go to 2 NA meetings a week because you're an addict. And I want you to get a sponsor with at least 10 years clean, like a drill sergeant, NA if you can find one." And I came out in 1983. I couldn't find one. I heard, you know, rumors of this Dutch and Blaze, and you know, but they were like unicorns to me. Because, you know, I lived in Maple Shade, New Jersey, a small little town. You know, I was going to go in search of yoga. The last meeting I went to, I was working in the supermarket on the night shift, and I would steal all night long and load up my car in my trunk, and I had a route from like North Philly down Germantown Avenue, and you know, and I had all my top spots, and you know, and I copped, and it was payday. I also cashed my check, and I got a bunch of drugs, and I went, it was winter time, and I stayed in an abandoned house in North Philly until like 6 o'clock at night, and then went home, and I still had the dry blood on my arm. And wife number one at the time said, man, you better get your ass to a meeting. And there wasn't no any meetings within a half an hour of me, because this one was in Woodbury. And so I went to an AA meeting, and I heard the speaker, and he said after the speaker, did anybody feel like drinking today? And I raised my hand, still had the blood on it. And I said, no, but I've been shooting coke since 4 o'clock this morning. And the lady looked at me and she said, I'm sorry, this isn't the right place, but they do have places for you, or people like you. So I got up, flipped in the door. By the way, this isn't like an ascot or you know, part of the outfit, so I don't drool all over my fucking chest. It's a drool stopper. Thanks, man. I can use all the love I can get, man. Sometimes I don't love myself. You know, I look at myself and I go, what the fuck? You know, but, you know, like I said, my spirit is good. You know, I have a great sponsor. I have a great group. Four of us flew up from Florida. They are not familiar with the East Coast, so I took them and showed them. We had a day in Philly. We met with Billy Wolf, and he took us to a great restaurant, to a great meeting, to hear him share. And he wouldn't tell me. I said, Billy, you're speaking. And he said, it's a surprise. But I'd go anywhere to hear Billy share, because he's just like us, man. He's an NA soldier, man. And, you know, all my life I've been the most comfortable around addicts. When I was using, I was most clean around using addicts. And when I'm in recovery, I'm most comfortable around clean addicts, man. I love you guys. I fucking can't get enough of you. Can't get enough of you. Love to talk about the old days. Love to talk about the new days. Love to talk about our hopes for the future. Love to talk shit. You know what I mean? I used to talk a lot of shit when I was on a tier. And I used to roll my own cigarettes and wear a state issue clothes and talk about how many bitches I had on the street. And the only female on my prison list was my mom. And, you know, I would have you want to believe I work for Pablo Escobar. And the bottom line is I was just here common every day, one bag at a time. If I could get a half a bag, and if I couldn't get that, a cotton shot would do. You know? You know, there was no glamour or romance in my story, believe me. You know, my story was how many days am I going to have to wear the same underwear? You know? Or my mom and dad wouldn't even give me money, but they would buy me clothes, and I'd just sell the clothes. When I use drugs, you might as well put an eviction sign in front of my yard. You know, and you might as well put a sign, everything must go, yard sale. I can remember riding the bus on North Avenue in Baltimore City, riding the man alive to get my methadone. And I would look down and see a brand new Corvette. And I'd say, shit, man, I could have that. I probably shot two of them this year. But the truth is, I couldn't have it. Either the disease would not allow me to have it, or the disease would rob me of it. And between those two things, I didn't have a chance at anything, man. Anything. You know, my big treat was a 50-cent Valium to kick in my methadone. You know, that's about my fucking extent. My father used to always say to his friends, he'd say, man, my son Barry is like a magician. Everything he touches turns to shit. And I can remember when I was 16 years old, they found a 6-hose water pipe in my truck. And my father looked at me and he goes, Barry, when are you going to grow up? And I laughed. And at 18, they found a set of works in my car. And my dad said, "Back, when are you going to grow up?" And at 20, when the door got kicked in, and they took me out, and bail was higher than the worth of the house, he came up and visited me. He said, "Back, when are you going to grow up?" And he died before I ever got clean. And at 35, my mom took over the job. And when my mom said, "Bad, when are you going to grow up at 35? It had lost all humor. It just wasn't funny anymore. But I had never seen anyone recover or find recovery from the disease of addiction. Never. I saw my friends go to Second Genesis. I saw my buddy Harvey go to the federal drug forum in Lexington, Kentucky, numerous times. I saw them scrub bathroom floors with toothbrushes and wear signs that said, "King Baby," and never saw any of them recover because at 6 months they were given the right to drink alcohol, and nobody could understand why at 6 months and 2 weeks they were back banging on the cop man. I'll take two and two. Nobody knew. That's what makes our lives so fortunate. We're the first generation to know and feel and live recovery. Real, real, real recovery. Narcotics Anonymous recovery. Like, I tried everything else. Man, my mom, I remember her sending me to a $100 an hour psychiatrist. And I shot morphine out in his parking lot. I came in and I was fucking wasted. And he looked at me and goes, "What the hell is wrong with you?" And I said, "Oh, I just got off in your parking lot." And he said, "Well, I can't continue to treat you if you don't stop." And I said, "Okay, I'll stop." And the next week, I just waited until I was done with him. And he said to me, "Have you used all week?" And I'm like, "No." And it stopped there. He never questioned it. That, you know, the medical field was clueless. It took addicts to find our way of life.
Yes.
The therapeutic value of one addict helping another. The ultimate weapon, the recovering addict.
Yes.
If we don't use what we have, we'll lose it. Yes. If we don't give it away, we can't keep it. Narcotics Anonymous is the first place I came where they not only identified the proper problem, they identified the correct solution.
Yes.
They told me in the first step that I have a disease, that I'm not a bad person, I'm a sick person, and that I have a disease that's mental, physical, spiritual, emotional. And they will reach every area through the 12 steps that are written so simply that any one of us can follow them in our daily lives. My buddy Rocky always says he's never met an addict too stupid to recover. But the graveyard is full of smart addicts. And it's the truth, man. The simple transformation that takes place in our spirit just with the admission of my powerlessness and the unmanageability of my life. And Dutch always used to tell me, one of his favorite sayings is, "Willingness trumps all." He said, just bring willingness and everything will work out. And that's all I had when I arrived here, was willingness. I had no honesty. I had no open-mindedness. I had no acceptance. But I was willing. And I came and I saw the example of somebody, a dude was celebrated 2 years in Maple Shade. His name was Mickey. And he's not alive anymore. And he had done a lot of time in Trenton State Prison for arson and terroristic threats. And he was celebrating 2 years. Can you imagine 2 years? That's over 700 days in a row without taking anything. That was attractive to me. A week was attractive. A day was attractive. I didn't know how to get that. I didn't know how to do that. I remember going to my first meeting clean, had a treatment, and I raised my hand and I identified as an addict and I said, I'm new and I need help. And they invited me to come with them, and I hadn't been invited anywhere in a long time. I hadn't been made to feel welcome anywhere in a long time. Narcotics Anonymous made me feel welcome. That was the bonus to the program in the first step where they offered the solution. The solution is, I can't use successfully. The solution is, I can't manage my life. The solution is, self-sufficiency is a lie. Then they gave us step two. And step two says, we could be restored to sanity. Not would be, but we could be. If we're what? Willing. So, it told me that I could be restored to sanity, and I would have to do some work.
In my second step for me, I approached it like I was a trial attorney. And it was like, okay, I'm 36 years old. I've never been off parole or probation since I was 16. And like when I had like a year, and I've been in Narcotics Anonymous like a year, and I haven't even been arrested. I haven't committed any real crimes. Maybe something works here. And then in the third step, I made that decision willing to place my will and my life in the care of this loving God who I was witnessing working in everybody's lives. And you know, and I was so shallow as a human being that when I saw him working in the lives of others, I saw people with new pants and a gold chain and a valid driver's license. I was totally focused on the external world. And Dutch taught me over years that the internal life rules the external life. And if we look inside and go inside and feed our spirits, the outside world becomes less important. That we can stop using things and using people. And we become decent human beings. And it all boils down to, who or what do I really want to be in my life? You know, I'm going to be 72 years old in a couple of months. And I know I have way, 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 way more time behind me than I do in front of me. And I don't know what the quality of the time in front of me is. So I'm trying to make the best of every day now. But I consider what my legacy would like, what I would like it to be. And I would like it to be, he was a good dude. You know, nothing elaborate. I don't have to save the world. If I could just save one addict, I did what I was supposed to do. You know, I liken NA, this is just an analogy, like a football team. And God is the quarterback. And 48 years ago, Dutch was the fullback. And God called the play, and the play was, hey, Dutch, I'm going to hand the ball off to you. And the ball was in there. And I want you to run it as far as you can, as hard as you can, as long as you can. And I want you to get as many people as you can chasing you. And then hopefully those people will have something attractive enough to have more people chasing them. And then those people will have something attractive enough to have more people chasing them. Hello?
All right.
You get the point?
Yeah.
We're those people.
Yeah.
It's our responsibility. Thank you, Dutch, for teaching us that. Yeah. He never did it by beating my head against the desk or beating me up over it. One time he did, I'll get into that later. He did it by example. Oh, we had anybody who knows Dutch, Alan knows Dutch longer than I. A lot of people here, Danny knows Dutch. Dutch did it all by example. He wasn't a teacher in the educational sense of the word. He did it just by hanging out with him. And he made it so obvious and easy to see. And it's a beautiful thing. I forgot what I was going to say. Anybody remember what I was going to say? Oh, yeah, yeah. The last convention, I used to be Dutch's road dog, and I was really proud of him. And the last place we went was me, Dutch, and Gary Feldman. We went to Nebraska. Dutch was asked to be the banquet speaker, and I was doing the men's rap. And I was on the phone walking down the hallway, and there's, you know, in between meetings, and there's all kinds of people, all kinds of noise, people hugging, you know, typical boisterous NA hallway. And I'm talking on the phone for minutes. And Dutch all of a sudden turned around and he looked at me and goes, "Hey," he goes, "you want to talk on the fucking phone or you want to spend time with me?" He said, "It's rude. Put the phone away. If you need to talk on the phone, go back to the room or go outside." And lesson learned. And Gary said, "Dutch, don't you think you're being a little hard on him?" Like the beaver, right? Dutch looked at Gary and he said, "Hey, Gary, I don't know how much time I got left in this world, but I made a commitment to sponsor people. And when I sponsor people, they're going to get the real deal."
Right.
You know, I'm not going to be. One thing Dutch was not was an emotional coward. And I am. You know, sometimes I would hurt myself rather than hurt somebody else's feelings. And that just showed me how much recovery he had. He was nobody's punk.
Right.
Nobody's chump, ever. Ever. And he would say what he meant, and he meant what he said. And that's integrity to me.
Yeah.
And that's who, you know, a funny thing I've heard a couple times in the last 6 months with somebody, I would say something, somebody said, "You know what, man, that sounds like Dutch." And I couldn't get a greater compliment. Couldn't beg, borrow, or steal a greater compliment. I'm becoming the person that he would like me to be. And that's an NA soldier who was willing to stand up for himself and live a life based in integrity. Another thing that really learned was sincerity. Like I remember when I did my eighth step and ninth step, he looked me right in the eye and said, "Did you do it sincerely? Did you mean it? Did it come from your heart?" And sometimes I'm like, "No, not really." He did it. Then do it again and mean it. Pray. And then what his favorite line was, "Just do the footwork and leave the results to God." And it's so true, man. Anyway, so I don't know when I die, I don't know if I want to be buried or cremated, but I told my kids I'll let them know when the time comes. But I said, if I have a tombstone, the one thing I'd like to have on it is here lies an NA soldier.
That's right.
He cares. Because I suffered in active addiction. I suffered. And that's a pretty deep word, suffer. I made my mother suffer. I made my father suffer. I made anyone who came into contact with me suffer. I'd steal anything, including your serenity. including your peace of mind. My father used to tell me when I was in prison that my mother used to sleep a lot better. But she didn't, she knew she wasn't going to get that phone call. And man, I just can't do enough. Can't say enough. Can't be enough. The people who know me know that. When I left Billy Wolf the other day in Philly, and I had Stevie and Mike and Paulie D with me, and we all flew up together, and then I said to Billy, I said, these are NA soldiers here. And Billy just looked at me and goes, Barry, I've known you over 30 years. They wouldn't be with you if they weren't NA soldiers. Steve's our H&I chair. Paulie is our everything guy, go-to guy. And Mike V is our speaker guy. If you ever see him, talk to him, he's a great guy. And we have Patty and Tommy back there and Shelly from our area. Real NA people through and through and through. You know, I got invited to Tommy's 25th anniversary party. And just for showing up, he gave me a second edition basic text.
Wow.
Yeah, that speaks volumes. And Patty is, anytime somebody says, hey, do you know a good woman speaker? Do you know a good woman? Somebody's moving to the area. I'm going to get them hooked up with a strong woman. Right to Patty. You know, they're here. They drove up from Florida. They're soldiers. NA has way too many lovers, not enough soldiers. I don't know how long I thought. Keep going. You know what I love about NA? You know what I love about Sharon? I get to talk about my two favorite things, me and NA. No, I'm like played out, you know. Like, if I keep talking, I'm gonna end up lying. It's been an honor, a real honor and privilege to be amongst my peers, people who I love, who I don't even know, and the people who I love that I do know. And each time I spend some more time with you, I get to love you more. And there's no cap on how much we can love somebody. And the neat thing about NA, it's the only place I've ever been where there's enough of everything that I don't have to steal anything. There's enough love for everybody. There's enough sponsors for everybody. There's enough recovery for anybody, for all of us, and for the people who haven't even come in the door yet. We don't even realize they're at it yet. We may not even be born yet. We'll be here waiting. Bring them on. That's why we huddle up and pray them in. Because we want everybody to experience our way of life. Because for addicts, it's either our way of life or suffer. And you know, like the pandemic thing, Billy got me hooked up to speak in Iran like 4 or 5 times, spoke in Egypt 4 or 5 times, Canada, Mexico, Scotland, England. It just gives us an opportunity to broaden our base. Oh, dig this. I got an email asking me to come and speak at the European Convention this July. But I can't go. Oh. But it was nice just to be asked to be fun.
Yeah.
And I'm one of you guys. I'm just like you guys. I just want to be loved and I want to be clean. And I want to be happy. You know, I'm not looking to set the world on fire, drive a Bentley, live in a house on the ocean, do a Miami Vice thing. I'm just happy I got my nice little house to go home to and my friends who I love to pieces and who we bring cheesesteaks to. And And I love you guys. Thanks.
Just for today, I'm unafraid. I thought.